afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And, wow, Bill's in full comfort mode here.
Well, this is a serious subject.
Bill's all mulled in for comfort, so we can talk about drug addiction.
Drug addiction.
But you know what? Usually when we talk about stuff like that, there's no answer. Today's show is all about the answer. It's very little about the problem, which is kind of awesome. And bottom line, you don't have to rely on us for that, because we have an expert with us. His name is Brady... what was it again, Bob?
Granier.
Granier. Very tricky.
Granier.
It's G-R-A-N-I-E-R. And I was like...
Six. Didn't you take French in school?
I was like, uh-oh. I could go anywhere with this. This is not good. And I forgot to ask him yesterday. Oh, my goodness. And the website for him is beataddiction.com. Catchy title. Easy to remember. And a little background, which explains the pronunciation. He was born and raised in the heart of Cajun country in southeast Louisiana, where he started working at the age of 11. So Brady's no lazy guy here. Working at the age of 11 to help support his single mom and his younger brother. After graduating with honors from high school, he attended college at Nicholls State University in Thibodaux, Louisiana, earned his bachelor's in nursing in 1995. And and then a horn went off. What was that? We've got some odd feedback happening here.
Brady?
Brady, have you been overtaken by a horn?
I'm here. Sorry about that. Something was happening on my phone.
Oh, good. At least it wasn't us. We just wanted to know where the horn was coming from. We typically have a... We're kind of near the fire department, so a lot of times we get little siren sounds, but horn was new. So let's see. I was looking at the little bio here. So you became a home health nurse. You were in ER, the ICU. You did all sorts of stuff. And then somehow you wound up being a traveling nurse, which made you go to California, which I thought was kind of funny. Did you travel to California to be a nurse, or were you just a traveling nurse when you were moving to California?
I wanted to get out of my little town of Louisiana, and that was one way to do it, was become a traveling nurse. And the plan was to, you know, hop, skip, and jump around the country and fill in for the nursing shortage that's everywhere, or was at the time. So my first stop was Southern California, and I'm still here 21 years later.
And you were at the ER in L.A., so obviously you weren't bored while you were there. I'm sure that was a busy, I don't know. And is that what got you into this?
Well, ERs are, you know, everywhere you go, the ERs have their busy times, and they also have their slow times, too. It's like, it's not always like you see on TV, but when it is busy, it can be crazy.
Yeah, I picture ER in L.A. as nonstop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Revolving door.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Why even have doors? What led you into this, into the world of drugs? The pharmaceutical end.
Interestingly, I left my nursing career, I think it was late 90s or around 2000 or so. I can't even keep up anymore. But I'd left it all together, and I was an entrepreneurial person. So I just started dabbling in other things in the internet when that became something. And, you know, I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and there's a lot of opportunity here. So I just, somehow I landed in the radio business. So I had a lot of friends that worked in radio just coincidentally. Over the years, I'd made friends with people that were managers or salespeople or some of the on-air talent. And so kind of fell into radio and did that for about 11 years or so, and climbed the ladder at that company, big company called Clear Channel, which is now iHeartMedia. They're all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
And the world, for that matter. But I was always the healthcare category captain, because when you're a nurse or a doctor, you are the go-to person in your family, when your friends, for any health issues that people have. So similarly at work, you know, I was the go-to guy for that, and so eventually they named me the healthcare category captain. So any potential advertisers in the radio space that was healthcare related usually came across my desk, so those sales reps would had became had become the business director of business development. Over the years, I advanced to that position. So sales reps would bring their potential advertisers to me, and I would vet them out and go on meetings, and you know I can kind of talk to talk with the doctors that were potentially advertising whatever services they were. So what happened was one of my sales reps at the time, his brother was an alcoholic, and so he was searching for answers for that and came across this little clinic in Santa Ana, California that was doing this implant. And I had never heard of anything like it. Of course, I'd been out of the healthcare field for quite some time. And I learned a little bit more about that implant and what the medication was inside of that implant, did my research, and just trying to figure out why hadn't I heard of this when I was in healthcare. And because it turns out it was available back then.
Oh, wow.
So I did my due diligence and learned more about it, was intrigued by it. Because at first, it sounded like a scam to me that there's an implant for that stops people from drinking.
Why isn't everyone using
it? Just didn't make any sense to me. Couldn't put the two and two together. So you know, until you educate yourself. So I did, and I met the founders and the owners of the clinic, and met a bunch of patients that had gone through, and it was their miracle. You know, it's what they tried everything else, and this was the thing that worked for them. So you kind of get addicted to the. The space, and when you see some miraculous turnarounds, you want to be involved and you want to help somehow. So we at iHeart, our Clear Channel at the time, took a pretty good interest in what they were doing because we hadn't seen anything like it. So we helped them. I helped them in advising, and I mean they became an advertiser as well for which was great, and we got the word out for them and. But I just got more and more intrigued by what they were doing, met more and more patients, and decided that, hey, you know, I wanted to do more. And long story short, after two or three years of kind of getting to know the owners of that clinic down there, they asked me to come on and help them run the company because they just weren't, they had a great product, but they just weren't, they didn't know how to get it out there. And they were just doing this, having this one clinic, and they really needed help. So I was at a point in time in my life where I was able to take that jump and leap from a solid career with a steady paycheck and benefits and all these great things at a big company to this little startup sort of company that just happened to be public as well, which didn't make a lot of sense. That's a whole other story, but that's how I got attracted back into this and pulled back in, and so now I was able to kind of combine my healthcare background with my media and business experience over the 11 years, and then came over to the company, and we decided to reshape it and take this program that they were doing in one center and improve it, and then distribute it around the country so that more healthcare practitioners and patients could have access to it. And I'm sure we'll get into what that program is here shortly.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. It's interesting how people's lives take these little
turns. How long has that implant technology been around?
Over 20 years.
Well, no kidding.
This is nothing new. It's becoming more known, but it's been one of the best kept, it's been a secret, not because those who are doing it haven't tried to beat down the doors and raise their hand and scream that, hey, look over here, this works. It's just a lot to cut through and break through, and it's changing now because of the opioid epidemic. You know, the epidemic, as bad as it is, there's a lot of good from it, which you have to take from it, all these bad situations, right? And that is now more than ever in the history of addiction. Addiction is now becoming more and more recognized as a disease and not a moral failing, which is a monumental thing to happen.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So because of that, you know, it's always been a disease, but now people that previously thought it was something, you know, it was a choice, now are seeing the light. And that's changing how we treat a disease. Once something's a disease, it's no longer, you treat diseases with medications. That's part of how you treat and manage disease. Because before it was actually considered a disease, these medications, which is part, which is implant falls under, just didn't make sense to give someone who was abusing a substance another substance. So that's all changing in front of our eyes right now. I mean, that's what's happening. So this crisis has, you know, alcoholism is still a much, much bigger problem. So this opioid epidemic, because we're now seeing this as a disease and treating with medications, it's going to, or beginning to have a, will have a profound effect on other addictions as well, such as alcoholism. You know, you can't say that opioids is a disease without saying alcoholism is not a disease. So this is a good thing. The good from all of this is that you're going to see changes in how these things are treated and managed and looked upon.
And the implant, I'm still kind of fascinated by that. Where do they put it?
Well, it goes in the, typically, there's a few options on where we can go. For the most part, it's implanted in the lower left or right quadrant of the abdomen, sort of maybe like where you might have an appendectomy scar.
Right.
Some, it can be put in other places, but you typically are putting it where there's adipose tissue, fat tissue, because it's a very minor procedure. You're probably no more invasive than just getting stitches put in.
How big is it?
What's that?
How big is it?
Well, there's several different types, but for the most, you know, typically they may be a centimeter in diameter by a centimeter or so. So maybe like the tip of your, you know, small, you know, pinky finger.
Okay.
So they're large. Well, they are large pellets. So it's
right.
Not really. So they use the word. You hear the word implant, and when you think implant, you're thinking some device that needs to be removed.
Has to be reloaded.
It's really not. It's really pellets that are implanted, and
okay.
They completely dissolve. They don't.
Oh.
They do not need to be removed. There's other implants out there that have. They need to be removed, but this particular implant, or these implants, have been used for over 20 years. They completely dissolve, so they do not need to be removed. But the good thing is, they can be removed if they need to.
Okay.
So they're easy to remove if for some reason you have to. Now, what's in the implant is the question.
Well, let's hit that in just a second. We have to take a quick break. But yeah, I'm real interested in how this.
I didn't tell Bill anything I learned from you yesterday. I knew. So he says, it's funny listening to him ask you questions. It's like, oh, I just asked all these yesterday. I already know that one.
All right, let's take a break because I want to get back on this.
I know, this is
very
fun.
Interesting.
And we can pick up wherever you like, whatever makes sense. We'll be back with our guest, and we'll be talking about implants, but not the kind you think, and has the potential to really solve the opioid and alcoholism issue for folks. So if you have a friend or a family member and we're all headed into Thanksgiving, be thinking about that. This could be great information for them. You can find all the intel on this on our website, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. My daddy thinks I'm fine. They try to make me go to rehab. I won't go, go, go.
Maybe she should have gone to rehab.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so Brady, we realized we kind of got you, off to the races.
Yeah, here. I kind of jumped ahead there a little bit. So
curious. So, anything you feel like people should know before we march ahead, please feel free. We got all exuberant.
No, I'm. Well, we'll follow your lead.
We got a million questions.
So this is a like a pellet that's implanted under your skin or in the tissue, and it slowly dissolves. And how long does it last?
That's a good question. There's variability in them. So there are a few different types of implants out there, and they all generally are made of the same thing. It's the same active ingredient, naltrexone. And we can get into details of what naltrexone is in a bit, but it will vary. There are some versions, some varieties that may last a couple months. There are some varieties that will last up to 6 months and anywhere in between. So our particular program, we have 3-month variety, and then we also have another one that will last several months in maybe the 4 to 6 month range. You really can't tell, you can't come out and say specifically how long they last because it could range in each individual's metabolism. Mm-hmm. So there's really no, hey, it's going to last this long in you, and you, and you, and you. It varies per patient. So that's all part of the patient's management with the doctor and tracking, and we have a whole tracking program. So there's all those kinds of protocols with that. So it's not just, right. not just putting implants in people and patting on the back and saying, congratulations, you're cured.
Right.
It's not that at all.
So is
so, but
the...
to answer your question, it's several months is probably the best way to answer that, several months.
Okay. And is the ingredient... the same ingredient for alcohol as it would be for opioids?
Yes.
Oh.
So, naltrexone is the ingredient. And the, naltrexone is a very old medication. We don't own naltrexone, just to make sure everyone's on the same page here. Naltrexone is, was created, I think, in the 60s. And it was FDA approved in 1985, or 84, 85, for opioids. So it was what they call an antagonist. And it basically blocks the same receptors in your brain that opioids attach to. And it has a stronger affinity for it. I'm sure everyone's familiar with the, and they're confused a lot of times. Everyone's familiar with the drug naloxone, which is the opioid, the heroin antidote for overdose reversal.
Oh, okay.
Naloxone,
okay.
You may hear Narcan's the spray.
Narcan.
That's the big pop. That's what's popular right now. Unfortunately, everyone's carrying these because of how bad it really is out there. So that Narcan is a brand name. Naloxone is the generic drug that's in Narcan. It's a cousin to naltrexone. So they're both antagonists. So if someone's overdosing, they get the naloxone or the Narcan, and it blows all of those opioids off of those receptors. And so it basically throws them into withdrawals to save their life.
And that's an injection.
And so breathing comes back.
That's an injection, a needle injection?
It's an injection or a nasal spray. It comes in a couple different versions.
Okay.
How it's administered. But it's very short-acting. Like, that may last a couple of hours. But it's enough, you know, we're saving someone's life. That's not treatment. That's just saving someone's life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, trexone is a cousin to naloxone. So basically, instead of blowing off those blowing off the opioids off the receptors, the naltrexone is in the body and it's latching on to those receptors, and it has a stronger magnetism, let's call it, for those receptors. So it covers up the hole, let's say, and then it stays there. And if you take opioids, those opioid molecules can't engage with those receptors. They just kind of wash off like water off a duck's back.
So there's no effect.
And it can't, so you can't get high and you can't overdose as long as you have therapeutic levels in the bloodstream and as long as someone's not shooting up copious amounts of heroin to try to overcome the blockade. It's possible, but usually it would require so much heroin that they couldn't afford to do it anyway. So it gives that protection. So that's kind of the best way to describe kind of how naltrexone works. That's how it works for opioids. Now your question was, alcohol. It was all of the mechanisms of why it helps for alcoholism are still not even that known. It was later FDA approved for alcoholism in the mid-90s, and it's not going to stop someone from getting inebriated or drunk if they drink when on the medication. It also doesn't cause someone to get sick if they drink while on the medication, unlike that's antabuse. It's another medication that makes people sick when they drink it, they're taking antabuse. But what it's doing, you know, naltrexone kind of works to block any, it could block many different types of obsessive compulsive disorders and cravings.
Mm.
So it works a little differently with alcohol. So it will stop the craving cycle, or it can minimize the craving cycle, and then it blocks the euphoric effects of drinking.
Oh,
so
wow.
If you were to drink, you just don't get the buzz. So it takes the pleasure of the drinking away.
Literally takes the fun out of it.
Get drunk, lose your faculties, pass out, hangover, all the bad stuff you keep.
Oh.
You don't get the good stuff.
Okay.
So it literally takes the fun out of drinking.
So I kind of see the advantage of an implant over taking a pill. You don't have a choice. Once that's implanted, there's no forgetting to take it or not taking it and going to a party or, you know, that sort of activity. Once it's implanted, you're committed.
Correct. You're right. Yes, because, look, this medication has been around, as I said earlier, mid-80s, mid-90s, in a pill form, a once-a-day pill form.
Right.
And if people were compliant, then there wouldn't be a need for these long-term sustained-release products, or be less of a need. But you're right, you hit the nail on the head. You have to take it every day. So every day when you wake up, you have to decide, do I want this pill or do I want my best friend, which is sometimes that drink or that drug of choice. There's a party coming up. The holidays are coming up. I'll just not take it now. So that's the problem with the medication itself. Works fantastic if it's in your body.
Right.
And that's why the sustained release, just like you said, it takes rid of the, you have to make the decision once, and then once it's in you, you have that window of opportunity to then deal with the underlying reasons for the addiction and develop tools to avoid the stressors in life, those triggers that happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that once the implant wears off, then you hopefully by that time will be better equipped to deal with life.
Now, you said the lasting effect depends on a person's metabolism. What are the downsides? What are the side effects of this drug?
Good question. Well, there's nausea that can happen and vomiting, which usually is minimal and self-contained in the first couple of days. You know, naltrexone is a lot's happening, and changes are happening. But it's basically the same sorts of side effects that you would get from the oral form and the implant form. But nausea, vomiting, maybe some insomnia, and again, most of them are self-limiting. They may need some comfort meds or something like that. But for the most part, it's very safe. It's a very safe medication.
Would a person be advised to take the pill form first to see how their body is affected by it before they went to the extreme of doing an implant?
Yeah, that's a good question. It depends on the doctor. Every doctor practices medicine their own way. For opioids, for example, before anyone can be on naltrexone in any form, they have to be detoxed and clean from opioids. Because remember the naloxone that's reversing the overdose? Well, if you put naltrexone, or someone swallows naltrexone, gets a shot of it or implanted, whatever form it may come in, and they still have opioids in their system, it's going to knock those opioids off of those receptors, and it's going to send them into withdrawal, which is very uncomfortable.
Right.
Not as much dangerous as it is uncomfortable. And that's a miserable thing. So they must be detoxed before they can get on to that. So to answer your question, when it comes to giving someone naltrexone, that's an opioid user, they will usually give them what they call a challenge. They can either do it with naloxone or with naltrexone because they're both antagonists, and give them a little bit by mouth and see, like not a normal dose, and see if they go into like little minor withdrawals. It's what's called a challenge, naltrexone or naloxone challenge. Of course, they also confirm usually with blood tests to make sure, but they still sometimes will give this challenge. With alcoholism, they need to be detoxed too, but it's usually, that's not as difficult usually as it is for opioids. It's a shorter period of time. But again, some doctors may try, a lot of people who get naltrexone implants, they've usually tried some other form of naltrexone before and just couldn't remain compliant. They liked how it worked on them, but they just couldn't stay compliant.
Right. And that gets back to the whole mental behavioral problem, the underlying problem of why they drink to begin with.
It doesn't get rid of all those things, which is where the behavior modification comes in.
Yeah, well, this is one of these things where every case is different.
Yeah.
We've seen people get implants and bail, which is not recommended, just bail on getting any sort of behavioral support and do fine. you know, some, it's just every situation is different. Why were they, you know, why were they addicted to begin with? Was it a physical pain that started this? Was it recreational? Was it, you know, was it a injury where, you know, if you break your leg and you got an opioid, but you didn't, you know, your life was great before that, you had no issues psychologically, and you get hooked physically, you know, does that person need the long-term behavioral support, or do they just need to be clean and just never use it again, or have minimal support? You know, those are extreme, so they could be all sorts of extremes. That's why each case is different, and that's why they're under the care of a doctor and hopefully counselors, and they can, you know, treat this individual as they need to be treated. So each case, there's no one size. This is not a one size fits all or a magic bullet. This is a great tool or more weaponry to combat this crisis. But if it's in you, it's a pretty good insurance policy. If this naltrexone's in your body for several months, it's an insurance policy against relapse.
Right. Yeah, because I imagine that's a biggie is relapse. Person, you know, gets clean. You hear it all the time. Oh, I mean, I was clean for 6 months, and now they're using again. So relapse is probably pretty common, isn't it?
Well, and tell me this. Because always it's cost, right? We always have a cost factor. So we had talked originally, the whole reason this came up was about use through the Veterans Administration and how this could help combat the opioid crisis. So from a cost standpoint, putting someone on this medication versus this injectable type, or what do you call it, an implant, what's the difference between the two? Is it huge or...
Well, I
guess deal breaker.
The prices are all over the place depending on the position and what sort of treatment. That's like saying how much is it going to cost for me to treat and manage your diabetes for your life.
Sure.
Your life.
But is it one of those things that they'll use?
No, they're not going to be different. But to give you ideas, I can give you kind of like some averages and what's out there now. So the typical traditional 30 days in a residential rehab, which has kind of been the standard or what's been known forever, is, you know, go to rehab.
Right.
That 30-day rehab, residential rehab, around the country on average is about $27,500 a month. That's the typical cost for 30 days in a rehab setting, and it ranges everywhere. I mean, it could be much cheaper, of course, and if you're in, you know, here in California and there's in Malibu, you could be spending $80,000 a month. That's for the rich and famous,
right,
of course. But it can range, and that's for 30 days of residential rehab, which is, you know, some people need to be in that type of setting to be out of their environment to get clean and detox. But that's really not treatment. That's the beginning of treatment, just like going to detox is. But that's not treatment and management. So now that remember, this is a disease now, you manage diseases. You try to cure them or you manage them. So this is why these 30-day rehabs are just kind of the beginning of that process. Now, when it comes to, you know, implants, or our program, for example, our program is called the BioCorrect Recovery Program. So what we've done is we have our particular implant that's been used for about 7 years in the U.S. and even longer in Australia, about twice as long. We've developed an entire behavioral program around that. That concludes peer support, counseling, therapy, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, all of those things, and we offer that to independent treatment providers around the country. They, in turn, use that, and they price that however they like, depending on the individual, because sometimes they have to do detox. Some patients are more hands-on. You know, there's a lot of people that are involved in the care of one individual. So to give you an idea of the range, it's usually, from what we hear from the field, anywhere from about $8,000 or $9,000, to the low teens, maybe $12,500, $14,000, somewhere in there. It can range anywhere in there for a program that includes the implant therapy, but all of the counseling, all of the peer support, all of the medical care and follow up, you know, the procedure itself, removing stitches, you know, the H&Ps, everything involved, so from soup to nuts, you're in about that range. So if you compare that to a 30-day rehab, you can see, you can do the comparison there.
Besides the fact that it lasts longer than 30 days, and I would imagine you're... When we come back, can we talk about success rate? Do you have enough data for that?
Sure.
Yeah, because I'm going to put my wager in now.
Yeah.
On success rate.
Happy to.
Very good. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
Sometimes I feel like I don't have a partner. Sometimes I feel like my only friend is the city I live in, the city of angel. Lonely as I am, together we cry. I drive on the streets 'cause she's my companion. Walk through the hills 'cause she knows who I am. She sees my good deeds and she kisses the wind. Well, I never worry, now that is a lie.
The poison, I've got the remedy. The remedy is your experience. This is a dangerous liaison. I says the comedy is that serious. This is a strange enough new play on words. I said the tragedy is how you're gonna spend the rest of your nights with the light on. So shine the light on all of your friends. Well, it all amounts to nothing in the end. I won't worry.
Nice. I knew you'd have a plethora of music for us, Bob. All right, Brady, take us through this. So if you have somebody in your family or friend network, how do they get on track with this? I mean, especially you live out in the middle of nowhere. If you live in downtown LA, I'm sure you have a lot of choices. But let's just say you live in somewhere else that doesn't have, you know, massive medical options for this kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good question. So, and that's kind of our, you know, our goal with BioCorrex is making this program as easily accessible as possible. Because that's one of the big challenges with addiction treatment. As you said, it's access to care is a big issue. Wanting care is probably a bigger issue than access to care.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a whole other story there.
You're talking about drug and alcohol abuse, but let's just say you got a parent of a kid, and
well, the first thing I'd say is, you know, our website beataddiction.com is an 888 number there, and there's also anyone can call, and there's also a page where you can look at where locations and where our particular program is available. And right now, I believe we're in about 12 states. Around the country, maybe 36 or so locations overall, heavily on the East Coast, in California, we have availability in 2 or 3 locations, but in kind of sporadically in between. But that's the best thing, is someone can go and see where, call the number, or find out if there's a place locally. Now, people travel all over the world to get these types of implants, and they're available in different countries. So that's the beauty, I guess, of this treatment is someone can potentially go to their family practitioner, coordinate it with a location that's nearest them to get with an implant provider, get their all their preparatory work done. They can come in for a day to get the procedure and go back home and then have their physician do the follow-up care. And then that can be done as quickly as just, you know, a drive, or we're trying to have this program available at an hour to drive or car or a short plane ride in the short term. But then once they get the implant, and it's working in their body for several months, then we help to get all of their behavioral care set up, which is the most important part of this program for their longevity of recovery and sobriety. And that can be done in several ways. We can link them with a counselor that's trained in our behavioral program in their local market. But if there is none and they're really rural, we have telecounseling available, which is, you know, telemedicine is also the wave of the future.
And telemedicine has become very, very popular with the Veterans Administration, and so far seems actually be working well. I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, well, it works well for certain issues, right? I mean, you can't stitch someone through telemedicine just yet, but
the one that really surprised me was dermatology. Very, very popular because I guess the camera that they shine on whatever the skin thing or focus on the skin thing, I guess the doctor can actually see it better through the camera than they would even with their naked eye. And I thought, okay, now I've heard everything.
Yeah, that's right. Well, similarly, when you think about mental health in general, you know, you don't need to touch someone to treat them for mental health. So it's probably one of the best suited uses of telemedicine. And not only that, it's about convenience. If there's some studies that have been done, I can't cite them because I don't know off the top of my head, but that telecounseling or teletherapy for behavioral health versus face-to-face, the outcomes were the same. Now, and one might argue that people, since you're making this convenient, think about it, driving to a counselor or a therapist, sit down there for an hour, that's not convenient. You know, when you could do it from your computer and you can do a session for 45 minutes, an hour, even 30 minutes, and some argue that you get more out of a 30-minute telecounseling session than a face-to-face hour because you kind of get to the point, you're saving time from commuting, and there's not a lot of small talk. You get to the issues, and you have a really good, attentive session, and it's convenient for all. So this lends itself well for those that obviously have access to the internet to do this. That's the other challenge, I guess, of rural areas. But this day and age, most people have access to an iPhone or can borrow one. But so that's how we're also addressing the topic we're talking about now is accessibility. So if we can get someone to travel for a day to get the implant, that's a huge, then we can handle the rest of them remotely. So that's part of how, you know, we offer that as options.
That's a cool idea. Because I'm looking, like here on the West Coast, I'm looking at your list, and okay, so you have L.A., you have Lakewood, you have Medford. So for those of us in the northern part of the state, Medford, Oregon is close. And go up just a little ways further, and you know you're into Portland, and so you guys are spaced out pretty nicely on the West Coast, and you've got places all over the place, Pennsylvania and Arkansas and Indiana.
We need more. I mean, we'd love to have hundreds of them available to make it even more convenient. It's all about
getting the word out.
All about reducing the barriers to treatment.
Yeah,
and accessibility is one of them. The other barrier is desire, motivation to get help, which is I think even harder. I think we'll overcome the accessibility one over time.
Sure.
But getting people to want to get into treatment is the bigger, I think the bigger issue.
Well, one of the things we were kind of chatting about yesterday while we were discussing some of this, you know, I could see this as being an option for some of the court-ordered stuff because I don't know about where you are, but where we are, there's no jail space, and we don't have, you know, abundant, mental health facilities. They're filled with people who oftentimes are, you know, criminal offenders, and it's just not always a good fit for this kind of thing. But this, I mean, is it possible this could become an option for court-ordered drug treatment?
It's very possible, and those are the things we're trying to accomplish. I mean, there's a lot of bureaucracy in all of this stuff.
Sure.
It's usually a bigger challenge. But we are making some headway, and we're keep on beating down the doors, because it is. I mean, you look at California, I think the average, the cost for 1 year of incarceration is $75,000, give or take.
It's still cheaper than rehab. Obviously, with the staggering numbers you gave us.
What's that?
Yeah, I said it's still cheaper than rehab with some of the staggering numbers you gave us. We had no idea.
Yeah, but those rehabs are being paid for usually privately.
Sure.
And there's high-end rehabs where we're funding this as taxpayers.
Right, right.
So California, again, still cheaper than rehab. One of the highest, the highest numbers for incarceration. I think most other states kind of, Midwest and South, you may be in, 19,000, 20,000. Still a lot of money.
It's a ton of money.
But that money would be better served going towards treatment for those drug offenders and keeping them out of prison. And not only that, have them be a productive member of society.
So somebody has, if they only do this one time, if they do the implant one time, they have, let's say, just for round numbers, like 4 to 6 months where they literally will not be able to use drugs because it makes them ill. So they have that time to get it out of their system to kind of get, depending on what was going on in their world before, maybe, get their head on straight. I realize relapse and all that stuff has to do with the person, so it might be kind of hard to measure, but that versus, like, you have to take a pill every day or you have to go to counseling every day or something like that, I would think this would be much more successful.
Well, you think so, right? It's about convenience for everyone involved. I mean, it's kind of...
Well, it takes away your choices for...
We don't want to paint this as a cure,
right,
or a quick fix.
But boy, if you had if you were somebody who, say, was an athlete and got hooked on pain medication and went, kind of got sucked into that vortex, a good 4 to 6 months out of that,
you're back on track.
Yeah, I mean, you're literally not having to reinvent yourself. You're just kind of clawing your way back to where you were before. Darn it, we have to celebrate capitalism again here.
Crutch,
for 2 minutes,
whatever you want to call it. But you guys be clear, it's not preventing people from doing drugs and they get sick if they do it. It's taking away a lot of the cravings or the desire.
If they
do use certain drugs, they won't feel the effect.
Yeah, they're going to want to.
People will test it. People will test this thing. Environment's a big part of it. If you put someone back in their environment, even if you take away their cravings, there's a habitual part of this as well.
Right.
So they need to really be committed to life changes. But this really gives them that opportunity to make some better choices. And let's use the best of this 4 to 6 month window or so. And let's all hands on deck and let's see what we can do in these 4 or 6 months. And if they need a subsequent implant, which we don't see much of in our case, especially with alcoholism, then it's there. That crutch is there. They need a little bit more time, but we don't really want to promote that this is what you should be doing forever. Let's get to the underlying issues. Let's have you get strong enough to deal with life stressors.
Well, it'd be kind of awesome to be a counselor partnered with this. You'd actually feel like you had a fighting chance
to get them over the hump.
It's funny. My daughter's a drug and alcohol counselor. I have to ask her if she knows about this. She's in rural Maine.
Well, let's take a real quick break, and then
I
want to talk a little bit more about the
short celebration of capitalism, and then we'll be right back. And beataddiction.com is their website, beataddiction.com. Be right back. You're listening to We the People.
My eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of years without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can.
Well, he stays away a lot now from the parties and the clubs. And he's thinking while he's jogging around. Sure is glad he quit the hard drugs. Lost him and his kind get more endangered every day, and pretty soon the species will just up and fade away, like the smoke from that torpedo, just up and fade away. Yeah, he's an old hippie and he don't know what to do. Should he hang on to the old, should he grab on to the new?
Oh, there you go. Just in case your webpage at beataddiction.com needs a theme song, that's possible for you.
There you go. Grab all them old hippies.
Oh, my gosh. So, Brady, who's using this, just out of curiosity? Old people, young people, everybody?
All ages. All ages. There's a lot of young people that are using it because, fortunately, they still have parents that can afford it. And then there's those
Three cheers for
middle
parents,
age,
huh?
More higher functioning, you know, addicts. Well, we don't call them addicts anymore. More functioning, you know.
But we know what that means.
From this addiction, you know, they are unfortunately the people that no longer have support, because a lot of people lose their family support and everything. Those people, unfortunately, aren't able to get the help. So that's the challenge. So it runs all ages. But who's actually getting it is those who can afford it. I mean, that's the problem.
And yeah. have you seen an uptick in usage in the last few years, or
uptick in demand?
Yes,
more
yeah,
than usage. There's definitely demand and desire from many people, many doctors even that are treating individuals. They can only treat with those methods and medications that are paid for by the government, or someone's
right.
paying, by any payer. So, you know, we talked to many addiction medicine doctors that tell us all the time, look, if this was covered, I would put implants on all my patients, because it's logical sense, right? It's
right.
Like I'd get it in them, and I don't have to worry about it for several months. You know, so that's the challenge. It's really, people want it.
And is that
getting the coverage?
That was one of my, that was my next question. Is what about insurance companies? Are they typically
are they receptive to this?
You see some, you know, a little bit of light there. I mean, it's so fragmented. I mean, right now, some PPO insurances are paying, you know, for this around the country, but it's very sporadic, and you can't really, you know, it's still out of pocket required. And
sure.
again, if someone has PPO insurance, they probably still have some sort of resources, right?
Sure.
So,
what about all these
in the PPO market?
Well, since we've got like a minute left, sorry, I hate to leave this for the last minute, but I know most of us have all these people in our towns that are just, I mean, it's kind of turning into, you know, Night of the Living Dead. They're kind of wandering around, and some are getting in trouble, some are not. See any, I don't know, avenue to help us help those folks that have no means whatsoever?
Yeah, it's tough, right? It's a big problem. It's a tough, difficult one to solve. While we've been talking all day about, you know, the implant and naltrexone and how that's great for you know, for keeping people from relapsing, but there are other medications like buprenorphine and methadone, for example. Those are the other two big medications for what they call medication assisted treatment. Sometimes those are a better route for individuals who simply can't get clean and detox, or can't afford this antagonist treatment like naltrexone. It tends to be more expensive than some of the other options out there like buprenorphine, but that also has its own challenges. But sometimes people need to be stabilized in some of these other things, and then maybe naltrexone could be for them in the future. So for those types of individuals, I mean, it's all about, you know, helping them, you know, if they can't afford access,
right,
then, you know, they need to find some treatment available that is free. And they should look at government websites like SAMHSA and things like that, and look for those services. But they have to, again, they have to want it.
Yes.
They have to want
sometimes,
to get help.
Sometimes
if
there's
they
somebody
want to
in their
help,
family.
They want to get help. It's out there.
Well, we are grateful for the information. Thank you so much. People can find all of that at beataddiction.com, beataddiction.com. There's a phone number. We've got Brady's Twitter information on our website. And keep us posted on this, will you?
Yeah, like at any time. There's always a lot to talk about, unfortunately.
You can be our medical guy.
Thanks. I'm used to that.
Thanks a million. All right, guys, we'll see you next
Thank
week.
Thank you, guys.
You're listening to We the People. Archive will be up shortly at wethepeopleradio.us.